You're listening to the Poetry of Impact podcast, sharing untold stories at the intersection of wealth, wisdom, and well-being with your host, Gino Borges.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Poetry of Impact podcast. Joining us today is Tilly Walton, an award-winning river conservationist, hydrologist, river guide, and speaker. As the host of Wild Rivers with Tilly on PBS, she's passionate about creating moments of awe and wonder and helping people experience connection to self, to others, and to nature. In this episode, Tilly tells a story of how an immersive nature experience in high school sparked her deep and abiding love for rivers. Her experiences in the backcountry and brushing up against the margins of life set her on a path to study waterways from both a scientific and an experiential perspective. Tilly shares about the unique annual river trips she hosts for influential leaders and the profound shift that occurs when folks embrace the discomfort of the backcountry and give themselves over to river time. Ultimately, Tilly's work is about inviting folks to shed the layers and step into the greater presence and flow of life. Drop in and enjoy this talk with Tilly Walton. Hi, Tilly. It's great to have you here today.
Hi, Gina. Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, great. Well, you come so highly recommended from the folks at Nexus and David Dietz. And so it's been quite a feat to actually schedule a time that both of us can talk. I think we've been at it for about 6 to 9 months. So I feel very privileged to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And yeah, those guys are such a great network. Love Nexus.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you. So, you know, you and I share, I think, a lot in terms of when we're not at the computer and not hanging out and reinforcing our front country personas and doing the work in the front country. We have this sense of belonging, type of coming home that occurs when we go out into the back country. And a lot to explore there, not just in terms of its impact on the world, in terms of how you arrange these offerings. We'll talk more about this, but also you as an individual. And so if you can actually touch on how we got here, because not everybody ends up in the backcountry unless your family was a bunch of backcountry folks, which nobody that I've ever interviewed has any family so far that's backcountry folks from the start. They go into the backcountry at certain points for two reasons. One, recreational, and the other one is seek. Man, we seek when we're lost. And that was the reason why I got exposed to the backcountry. As a dear friend of mine, during a moment of me seeking immensely after I got done with my PhD at Purdue in philosophy, which will lead you into a state of nihilism to go into philosophy that deep. But I'd like to understand your journey there. I mean, was it out of seeking or was it out of recreation or some combination of both? And when and where did that begin?
Good questions. Yes. Yeah, because you're right. Wilderness, it does become where you find yourself and home has been my experience. My journey started, you know, I grew up a city kid in Denver and my parents did expose us to the backcountry. My first camping trip was when I was 4 and my brother was 3. And it was the night of a crazy flood. It was actually a horrendous experience. And my dad actually said he was shocked when we asked us, you know, hey, do you want to ever do this again? And we said, yes, absolutely. And so I'm not sure why I loved it so much, but something about it I did love. But I didn't have that much exposure other than backpacking. And then in high school, my senior year of high school, there was an experiential education program that was being offered at one of the magnet schools. And so I, much to the chagrin of all my advisors and counselors and everybody, ended up going into that program. And part of that was a 3-week outward bound type expedition to Big Bend National Park. And on that trip, you know, we hiked 14-mile days. We ended up starving because we were a bunch of city kids who had planned the menu. And then we had a 3-day canoe trip down Santa Elena Canyon. And that was the moment I got hooked because the guide told me to lean back in the canoe and I watched the canyon walls go by and I felt the water under me and something just clicked in me and I was like, this is it. I have to be on the river. And so that was kind of the main moment of knowing that. And then, you know, there was a boy involved in the story who was a river guide. And of course, like, why wouldn't there be a boy? And so, you know, I learned how to become a river guide. And there was just something about the river that really, really hooked me and engaged me. And, you know, it might have had a lot to do with following the boy initially, but, you know, it really led me to like what's part of my soul, which is, you know, I think my true love for being on the water and immersed in nature. And of course, you know, being a teenager, that's a time when, I don't know about other people, but I know I felt incredibly lost. And so I think in large part, you know, I found some sort of solace in having that wilderness experience that I couldn't get from elsewhere. Because prior to this whole Outward Bound type of camping thing, I wanted to be, you know, a lawyer and live in Malibu and drive a little red convertible. So those were my aspirations as a, you know, prior to at least getting my priorities straight.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, talk a little bit about that notion of being lost. You said as a teenager or in your 20s?
Oh, gosh, I don't even know if I've ever been found yet. But,
or partially arriving.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've definitely partially been found. You know, I just think as a teenager, you know, I moved out when I was 16. I had an experience of actually lived out of my car for a while. Like I was definitely very on my own and kind of lost in the world. So it was definitely a time of being lost.
Yeah. I mean, who were some of your mentors during those moments in terms of like, who are you listening to? Who are you reading during those days in order to say yes?
Yeah, well, back in the day there, I was, you know, reading Ed Abbey and Tom Robbins and, you know, actually probably my grandmother was one of the most influential people on me. But, you know, Ed Abbey certainly was a huge influence in getting me, you know, just that writing about that connection that we have to nature. And I know he's kind of controversial at this point, but at that moment in time, he was a big influence.
Yeah, he's huge. You know, when you go through kind of, you know, yeah, you know, the saying, kind of the dirtbag moment where, you know, you haven't showered for a long time and you're bumping up against other nomads who are also seeking. And so, but I remember like Edward Abbey was introduced to me in the classic sense. So I was down in Flagstaff, Arizona, desert survival training for about six weeks with Tony Nestor of Ancient Pathways. And he did a beautiful job curating it. And all of a sudden, this guy pulls out, you know, these books of Abbey. And we had lots of time. You know, I mean, all we did was like spend an entire day just trying to make a shelter and stay at like 98.6 degrees. And then after that, you kind of had to learn how to be by yourself for an extended period of time. So you read. And I read The Monkey Wrench Gang. And what was interesting about it was that during my studies, I studied a lot of more radical ecology and a lot of the efforts that were being done to actually change or influence the Western paradigm through aggressive behavior, right? Through, and it's like, okay, you're not going to get the matrix to flip the script. And there was a side of like through policy advocacy. I mean, there was a side. And of course, when you have a lot of pent up energy and when you're listening to Rage Against the Machine and Smashing Pumpkins and all of a sudden Eddie Vedder and Into the Wild soundtrack is like your favorite thing on earth, you kind of realize like, oh, shit, it's like, wow, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I've never been exposed to this. And it felt wild. It felt like it was like I was on the margins all of a sudden. I'd never been on the margins like that. And there was a type of aliveness I had never experienced by being on the margins of both culture and nature at the same time. And it kind of sounds like when all of a sudden you chose to live in a van and a car for a while and you were guiding, you brushed up against the margins as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because at the time it felt like, you know, it felt like, of course you would live out of your car. Why wouldn't you? And so, yeah, nothing really seemed out of the norm. But the part that really resonated with, you know, especially the taking action for nature. Like, I think I loved how the description of these places and also especially like of places that nobody knew. So like Katie Lee and Ed Abbey, they would talk about Glen Canyon, which was then later flooded out by Lake Powell. And so there was something that really resonated about like these cathedral in the desert and all these magical places that, you know, I would maybe never experience because of the changes that the earth had been experiencing. So, you know, and I do think there is something to be said for raising your voice for things that can't speak, like the earth or like a river. But then I guess, you know, it's kind of like, I think, was it Malcolm X as he went into his journey, like he kind of went more into love. And so I do think there's a lot more now that can be done when you're for something rather than against something. And so I guess my philosophy sort of shifted into more of the part that's for, like, what are you for versus what are you against?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little about what you're for and this whole notion of being on the water. I want to dive into a little bit more of a phenomenological understanding of water and not so much a cliched sense of water. But what happens in your relationship with water? You've spent more time on the water than most. So we have the Truckee River running through Reno, which is really quite the blessing because it's one of the few desert towns that have a river running through it, to a terminal lake of all things, to Pyramid Lake. So it runs from Lake Tahoe all the way to Pyramid Lake, which is just two incredible different types of bodies of water. And yet, in essence, it's the same body, but the terrain is just so much different. And I would love to get a feeling on what happens when you're enmeshed and dwelling with water.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, to me, I mean, water is magical. You know, I feel like it's a magical element of our planet, and that's what we're made of. Like, we're 70% water. So, you know, I think that's, and our planet's 70% water. So to me, it's really, that's in part why we resonate so much with water, or why there's something magical that happens on the water. And for me, when I'm on the water, even just sitting by the side of a lake, or it can be, in particular, it's a river, but it can also be the ocean or even a ditch or whatever, any type of water, sitting in the shower, anything. For me, it's just a real calming sense. It's like, it kind of quiets everything in my mind. It's, even though like I can be, you know, like, even if you're running like huge rapids and everything, and there's like that sense of anxiety or whatever that might come up, there's still at the base, like kind of a sense of calm and trust, because for me, what the water does is it pulls me into the present moment. And there really isn't anything else that exists outside of that moment, because you, and especially when you're rowing a boat or on the river, it's what's happening right now. And there really is no other time other than the right now. And so I think in large part, that's, at least for me, a piece of why there's something so special about water, because it just really centers me in the moment. And once, you know, and once you, my experience, at least, is once I'm centered in the moment, I kind of come home to myself and I just feel more at peace and more calm and I guess more a part of everything, like less separate.
Curious, has it led to, so I've spent a fair amount of time with a movement pioneer named Emily Conrad of Continuum. Have you ever been, are you familiar with the Continuum philosophy? It's a movement practice.
No, but I want to check it out.
And yeah, so it's all based on, well, what's fascinating about it is that we're not just water. We actually came from, so the premise is that, I mean, we were that, and I don't know exactly sort of the whole evolutionary arc of it, but we actually came out of the ocean and we found, and I mean, there was a threshold of being both an amphibian and a land-based animal at the same time, and all these kind of evolutionary negotiations that were taking place. But we never lost the ebb and flow character of our inner fluids. And so the movement practice is how we go inward, an awareness around the fluids within our body, and we move to bring attention to that movement, but then also to carry out where that movement would go as a result of seeing yourself as fluid. And what's interesting about this is that I got exposed to it in a couple of different realms up in Sea Ranch in Northern California, and then at Esalen. I was at a retreat down in Esalen. And what was phenomenal about it was that the bulk of the people in the class were older than I am. I'm 51 at the moment. And these people were like 70 years old and plus, and they were nimbler than any teenage 20-year-old modern day American body I've ever seen, because they were just moving from this fluid spine And so I guess where I'm going with this is that I'm excited for you to experience and answer this question. How does the water bring you in tune with your own inner fluids, in essence? Like, do you just kind of reconceive your whole notion of what it means to be on Earth as a fluid being?
Oh, I love that concept.
Yeah. I mean, me too. I was just like, wow. You know, I mean, it's kind of a wow concept. I remember when I was first taught, I was just like, wow. And the thing about it is that the slower you go with these movements, the more awareness happens around it. And you honestly start seeing yourself as this kind of this amphibian terra firma cross, you know, kind of like reliving your evolution, in essence.
Oh, that is so fascinating. I love that. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. But as far as like the fluidity, you know, for me, that makes a lot of sense too, because I look at the river as almost like a metaphor for life and kind of a metaphor for our own being. And so, you know, like rivers are, they're basically like the lifeblood of the earth. They're the rivers and arteries and veins of the planet that are carrying life everywhere. And so I guess much like that, the fluid in our bodies, you know, a river is a much healthier thing when it's allowed to free flow and it's not, you know, channelized or dammed up. And much like that, also, I think like our inner selves and our bodies and our emotions, you know, it's the more fluid we are with the emotions that we're feeling, you know, just because like there's times in my life where I've felt very stagnant. And much like if you're on a river and you come to a dam, you know, the dam has stopped the water, the flow of the water. And when you have water backed up, it's often not healthy. And that's much like, you know, at times in my life, I've had that sense too, like where you're stagnant and you're not flowing. And once you are in flow again, it feels a lot better. And so I guess that's also, you know, you talk about flow states and things like that too. The water for me also just puts you in such a flow state. And I think that's really more of our natural state. Like we're just kind of touching back into that innate part of us that is fluid and is in flow, which is, you know, if you take away all the stuff that we're learning here on this experience, it's,
yeah,
you really would just naturally be in flow, I like to think.
Yeah. So this idea of flow, what's it like when you transition from a time-based or a time-influenced Tilly in Colorado in the front country, like you are right now, to essentially the absence of time, unbounded by time? What happens to you during that process?
Yeah. Well, in part, I think I keep it all the time because it's actually known in my family as Tilly time.
so Tilly time. There, like it.
There is an element of that in everyday life. But I mean, it's known. I mean, we call the phenomena river time when I'm on the water. You know, it's known as river time. And it really puts you back into the rhythm of life and the kind of slower pace of, you know, you kind of wake up when the sun comes up, you go to bed, not too much, you know, you're not staying up necessarily most of the time all night on the river. And so it's kind of that you enter the flow more of a natural rhythm of, oh, you know, we're hungry, it's time to eat. And it's more of an honoring of kind of the rhythm of life versus by the clock and by the watch. And when I was guiding river trips, because I guided for about 15 years full time. And, you know, I just tell people, take your watch off because time is irrelevant out here. It doesn't really matter. You don't have anywhere to go. You know, it's part of that messing around in boats. There really is no time and you're always busy doing something, but never really doing anything at all. And
yeah.
So that's kind of a nice space to be in also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice. Well, that's good that you have found a way to not be besieged by time in the front country, Tilly. I'm impressed.
Well, to a limited extent, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I hear you. So, I mean, you have a little bit of a bohemian gene inside of you, I'm guessing, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of a bohemian gene in there.
So now where does the moment come where you realize like, gosh, not just that do I enjoy being out there, but I want other people to experience this as well. And yeah. I mean, that's a big leap to go from like just taking care of your own needs and your own self to like moving to, I want to midwife something way beyond me here.
Yeah, I think that was a very natural progression because, you know, I immediately went from this experience on the river to becoming a river guide. And when you're guiding people, you know, I think I went fairly quickly into multi-day trips versus just kind of like a half day or a full day trip. And so seeing the transformation, it was just so visible and watching, you know, it's, you just, you watch people shed the layers of their normal everyday life and like their light comes on and just the ahas that they have and just kind of that sense of relaxation back into themselves. And so that was kind of like an easy transition. And, you know, as part of like this trip I do every year, that's the most rewarding part is sharing it with other people. But, you know, I think more recently, I guess what I've watched is when people shed all these layers, they connect to themselves. And then when they connect to themselves, they connect to each other. And then when they're connecting to each other, you're also connecting to the earth. And so none of these things are separate. None of us are separate. We're all part of this one entity, this one being, or this one collective experience. And so when I've seen everybody kind of shed these layers and be connected, I find that not only do they take better care of themselves, they care for themselves, they care for each other, and they also want to care for the planet. And so in watching that, that's really inspired me to want to share this with as many people as possible. Because, I mean, these trips are incredible, but the sense of awe and wonder, and I think part of what does it is it's being by river, the river, it's being in nature, it's, you know, having an off-grid experience, but it's also experiencing this awe and wonder, like almost like the overview effect that the astronauts experience. And so from that, I've really been inspired to want to share that with more people. So part of that is, you know, doing this river trip once a year. But the other part is, you know, the PBS show that we put out is to try to, you know, share this experience with folks. You know, I mean, one of the most special experiences I had was, you know, watching one of the episodes before it was edited with my grandmother in the hospital room right before she died, because it was like, oh, I can take her on this trip, even though she can't actually be there to experience it. It's at least a taste of it. And, you know, trying to take that to a different level right now. And on the last trip, we filmed a 360. So we can do like virtual reality and put, you know, people into the headsets, but you can also experience it on a flat screen. But it's really like, how do we next level this and really try to give people an immersive experience so that they, even if it's just briefly, they touch into that moment that I've been lucky enough to experience so many times and I've been able to watch with, you know, witness others experience so many times. So it's really, how do we possibly share that with more people just to give them a taste? And, you know, I think people naturally seek it out on their own anyways, you know. Rivers have been gatherings, places for picnics and family occasions and ceremonies and all sorts of things, you know, all throughout history. So people naturally are seeking this out. And this is how can we, you know, put more icing on the cake and share something that most people will never get to experience.
This annual trip you put together, how did it manifest and what is its intention in particular? It sounds like a lot of work goes into this, a lot of thought. And so I'd love to better understand its origin and its method.
Yes. Well, you know, I had the history of guiding for many, many years. And then David Yetman from In the Americas with David Yetman on PBS had asked, can you put together a Grand Canyon trip for us? And so that led to a trip where I brought all the experts together because I thought they were going to speak on the show. And then I accidentally ended up co-hosting the show unexpectedly. But what I found out of this trip that we did were that these connections that everybody made and then the projects that resulted from these connections, because what I also did at the end is I had everybody make a commitment to something moving forward. And so, you know, still in touch with all the folks from the trip for the most part. And many of the folks are still to this day working on incredible projects. Like there were some pretty phenomenal projects that were birthed on that trip. And so after that happened, I just thought, oh, you know, this is an interesting way to pull together. You know, I love connecting people. And it's an interesting way to use I've been very fortunate to meet amazing people in my life, like to pull together these incredible folks, get them all in one place. And yeah, it's slowly as we've been, you know, doing this over the years, it's also developed more into almost like a spiritual experience. And that was the reason, you know, my background is science and I kind of got into the river from that perspective. But really, as I do more and am more open in how I share my experience and my love of it, is it really is kind of a deep spiritual experience for me. And I find that it's also that for many other people who would never expect it. And so it's sort of moved more into that as a major piece of it also, and less just pulling people in from, you know, one particular area like water. Now I pull them in from all different areas. And there's never, I don't prescribe, I ask them to make a commitment to do something to make the world a better place in their sphere of influence. And I don't prescribe what it is. I guess my philosophy is that, you know, everything that all of us are working on, whether it's coral reefs or, you know, impact investing or whatever the homelessness, whatever the piece is, that's not the important piece. The important piece is that we're all doing something. And so I never know kind of what ripple effect it's going to have as it goes out there, because I don't actually prescribe. I don't say like, can you donate to this or can you do this specifically? I just ask people like, whatever you get inspired to do, make that commitment to go forward with that much more energy in your life. Yeah, so there's been some incredible things that have come out of it.
Well, let's put a little bit more color into the method, though. You know, I mean, I think we were talking a little bit off camera about, you know, your method of how you put together the groups and, you know, how you challenge their needs right off the bat before they even get on a boat or even get on the plane to get there, wherever they're going. You're like, no, 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 no. And but you're saying yes to other things. And so I think it's important to understand that, because I think that's thoughtfully done. And then what happens when they're there? Because it sounds like you're taking some people that frankly probably are used to some pretty darn comfortable existences. And sometimes the backcountry is nasty raw, right? Especially if you end up sitting on an ant pile or you overheat, you get cold, you get too much sun exposure. Like, it can get bad fast.
Yeah, right? That finding comfort in the discomfort.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So I invite very well-known, influential folks, but part of the deal is I don't tell anybody who's on the trip. I don't give last names. I don't give bios. I don't share any information with people about who's on the trip. And I oftentimes have learned, you know, the process is I kind of pick folks intuitively. And I also, if they're going to say yes, they're going to be the right person for the trip. But I also know if they want to know who's going to be on the trip, what's their name, like that might not be the best fit, because part of going on the trip is I want people to meet each other with like a blank slate. So the very well-known Hollywood actress or, you know, athlete or whoever they are, it's really nice for them. They very rarely have that experience where they get to meet somebody one-on-one on a first name basis, maybe not be recognized, and actually get to kind of, you know, and take that piece of them that is such a big piece of who they are in this world and place them into just really, you get to know each other one-on-one for who you actually are, minus your accomplishments and all the great things you've done in the world, but who are you actually as a person? And, you know, that's part back to the river being the great equalizer of once you're out there in this wilderness experience, you know, kind of all these outer world things, they become less relevant because really you have just yourselves, your equipment, the food, and you're dependent on each other and how you interrelate with each other and how you treat each other and all of that becomes very way more important. And so I also, you know, while I bring very well-known people, I also always try to bring people from especially different Native American tribes on the trip, because we're going through their homelands and they're some of my biggest learnings have been from some of the incredible folks we've had on this trip that teach us really a different connection to the land and a different understanding of what is sacred. And then also, I just like bringing people from different backgrounds that have nothing, you know, their paths would never cross otherwise. And then they come together and they, you know, might think they have nothing in common, and then they find out they have everything in common. So it's really, you know, I feel like, you know, I've heard that quote, like somebody said, you know, there's that Mark Twain, like, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting, but like really water's for connecting. And so when all these people from all these different backgrounds come together, like they are fully connected. And once they're there, I have yet to see this, you know, not work. I mean, but every single time I've come off of a trip, we are family. Like you come in, you look at this group of strangers and you think, oh my gosh. And every time at the put-in, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm praying. I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I done this time? Like, I really hope this works, that, you know, I brought this person with this person, and oh no. And every single time people end up the best family ever. And I call it my river family, and they're friends for life after that.
Yeah. How many people go on this with you? Over how many days, how many miles? And I know there's Native American communities that are actually right on the river. How many do you go through? So it's more of a quantifying question. Just give people a little bit more color.
Well, let's see. I'm going to start just with the Colorado River, like a few facts based on the Colorado River, which is, you know, provides water to 40 million people, goes through the Grand Canyon. This is, you know, National Park, World Heritage Site, provides water to 7 basin states, country of the United States and Mexico, and all a bunch of Native American tribes or nations, and then provides billions of dollars in economic activity and electricity and agriculture and all that stuff. But these river trips, you know, we're going through the Grand Canyon National Park, and the trips are usually at least 8 days. And so it's hard to actually find people who want to take 8 days off the grid, because you are completely off grid. There's no cell service, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no nothing. And so you really literally check out to check in for 8 days. And the trips are anywhere. It depends. Sometimes they're motorized, sometimes they're rowing trips. If they're a motorized trip, we go about, I don't know, 280 miles through the entire stretch of the Grand Canyon and over the course of 8 or 9 days. Or if we do a rowing trip, we'll go about 90 miles and then you hike out of the canyon, and it's a 10-mile hike up one vertical mile. And so the trips range anywhere from 14 people to 28 people. And yeah, they kind of switch it up each year.
All right. Wow. So a couple things I want to kind of end up on is this idea. So how do you kind of help people? It's important to sleep well. I've learned it's important to sleep well. It's miserable waking up tired, and you can get tired really fast just from the awakened day conditions. So it's really important to find some decent rest. I mean, what's been some of your ways of helping yourself and helping others get a decent night rest in seeing the backcountry?
Yeah. Well, and you're right. Like, going back to, like, these are people that are, a lot of them, like, for example, one of my friends I took down, he was an NBA player, never swam, never camped out in his entire life. And so it was amazing. By day 4 or 5, there was another person on the trip who happened to help people learn how to swim and get over their fear of water. So by day 4, he was actually swimming small rapids and fully immersed and loved being in nature by the end of the trip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think part of it is just learning how to exist in the backcountry. And a river trip, in comparatively, is a relatively cushy way to do that. You know, you have fresh food, you're cooking, we have guides that are doing everything. But, you know, there's a big level of discomfort. Like, you know, on a, say, a Grand Canyon trip, like, you have to go pee in the water and you're peeing in front of 28 people, or, you know, you have to, we pack everything out. So, you know, there are pieces of it that are very uncomfortable. The sun is hot, the water's cold, there's red ants. Like, yeah, there's a lot of things that aren't great, but that's something, I think that is a component of peeling off the layers. You know, you just have to be able to exist in that, and you're teaching people, so they easily, people pick it up really fast. By day 3, everybody's kind of got it dialed.
Well, I'm just curious if it was the Denver Nuggets center, Jokic, that you took out there that would, I mean, he would definitely need his own boat. The guy's so big.
Oh, no, no, I took Festus Ezeli, and
Yeah. He's a big guy too. Yeah, he's a big guy too. I remember him watching him. I grew up watching the Warriors, so yeah.
Well, that's another thing we do on the trip is we've kind of, on one of my trips, I looked around and I said, oh my gosh, you guys are all so amazing. You don't need to hear from me. I need to hear from you.
Yeah.
So we implemented this thing called the knowledge chair. So now people, you know, we'll set up lights in the middle of nowhere with like kind of a cool waterfall in the background and
yeah,
on a log and set up candles. And then we say, speak for 10 minutes in like a TED style talk of the what you're passionate about. And so we've had, you know, like Ron Guerin, who's an astronaut, he took us on this meditation up into space and, you know, like being in the rocket ship and experiencing that overview effect. And then Wallace J. Nichols, who wrote Blue Mind, The Science of Why We Feel Good Around Water, you know, he took us, you know, after Ron took us up to space, he brought us back down to the earth and why water's so important. And so it's just had a really fun flow of people sharing their knowledge with each other. And that's been a really special part of the trip.
I love that. It's like a pop-up TEDx in the backcountry.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also don't tell people that they're going to be speaking either. So it's kind of, they have to ad-lib it.
Don't think too much about it, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. We've explored quite a bit. I mean, I want to also realize and accept the reality that you may have been ruminating on something as I've shared something, or something may be unexpressed in you. So I just want to give you the floor for sharing what you think would be kind of a nice way to put a bow on our conversation.
I guess I would just say, you know, go out there and be by water and experience, you know, go take a moment, whether it's in your bathtub or drinking a glass of water, or, you know, go out to your local river, or your, you know, your lake, or maybe it's in the frozen version and you're skiing and it's the mountains, but whatever it is, like take a moment to kind of have that appreciation for water and that connection. And, you know, just look for the moments of awe and wonder, because I think that's what brings hope and that's what brings connection, and look for the moments where you can share that awe and wonder with others, because that's the fun stuff. And that's kind of what you're doing here with your, you know, I love the name Poetry of Impact, because that's, you know, you've kind of brought that awe and wonder into the impact space. So I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you. And where, Tilly, can people learn more about the work that you and your team are doing?
Yeah. So we've got wildriverswithtilly.org and tillykwalton.com and Instagram. I think it's Tilly Walton Official and Wild Rivers with Tilly.
All right. Well, and we'll also have it all in the show notes as well. So it will be easy for people to reference.
Great. Great.
I really want to say thank you at a lot of different dimensions. On the personal side, I feel a lifetime seeker who knows that and feels that there is a level of essentialism within herself, but then also there's also a mist of trying to, while on this short time on earth, really kind of peel back and being in touch as much as possible with that essentialism, not just for yourself, but you're also helping others do the same thing in the context of physical action, not another white paper, but in physical uncomfortable action, and then physical uncomfortable backcountry action, which if you haven't done it before, I'm telling you, this is not easy. And there's a reason why the backcountry, you don't find a lot of people. You know, it's funny because, I mean, people laugh at this, but it's so true. Out of the now about 20 years that I've been exploring the backcountry, it hasn't been a lifetime thing for me. It's just been kind of a back half adult life thing. Is in the backcountry, it's the only place where you bump up into kind of like bohemian hippies or absolute crazies from a political side would be on the right side. You know, you can call them Trumpers, you can call them rednecks, you can call them whatever they want. But what's interestingly about what I find fascinating about this, Tilly, is that over the past 20 years, I've had a lot of needs in the backcountry, whether it's flat tire, my car broke down, my something. You know who's helped me out the most during those situations? Those people in the front country that politically have an affiliation that may not recognize me, or I may not recognize them. And that to me has always been, it's like, oh shit, this guy's coming up and he's got a shitload of weapons on him. And you know what? He's as tame as grandma and he's helping me out. And it's like, wow, it just goes to show me that there's something systemically in our fear machine and that's piss poor on bringing us together, and how much energy and waste we do as human beings and a bashing of the horns. In the backcountry, it just all dissipates. And like, we really do need each other back there. And I too have probably honestly helped out people that in the front country, if I saw them broken down the side of the road, I'd be less inclined to help than back there. It's like the guard's down for some reason. And there's something incredibly vibrationally moving about that entire experience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the big connector, and it really lets you kind of move past that book cover into like, hey, we're on, you know, Team Earth here. And
Team Earth, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
We're on Team Earth. It does feel like that. We're on Team Earth together. I don't feel like on Team Earth right here. I, you know.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All in it together. So
thank you so much, Tilly.
Oh, thank you. It's been great. Appreciate you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening in to today's conversation on the Poetry of Impact. The podcast exists for and because of listeners like you. Be sure to subscribe to the Poetry of Impact podcast on your favorite podcast player. And if you have time, leave us a review. Thanks again and goodbye for now. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Poetry of Impact podcast. For show notes and additional resources, visit poetryofimpact.com.